Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The West's drive to weaken and isolate Russia is not working out all that well. Russia, the most sanctioned country in the world, has an economy that is now stable and resilient. The West can't say the same for its economies. In fact, the West is weakening and isolating itself. Crosstalking economic blowback. I'm joined by my guest, Philip Giraldi in Percival. He is the executive director of the Council for the National Interest and a former CIA counterterrorism specialist. In Minneapolis, we have Stephen Ebert. He is a political analyst. And in Paris, we cross to Jean Bricmont. He is a political commentator. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Philip, let me go to you first here. That big $40 billion aid bill is about to go through Congress. That's not even, I think if we all add it up with the $40 billion, it's like $53 billion. But at the same time, I don't have a whole lot of respect for politicians, particularly in the West, but Congressman Chip Roy said, he kind of asked the most obvious question, I'm wondering when we voted to go to war. What is the objective here? I mean, you print all this money, which the U.S. certainly could use at the border, for example. So what is the objective? Congress is so determined to help Ukraine. Towards what end? Do you know? Go ahead.
Well, I don't know. To me, I'm mystified as to what is really going through the heads of our elected leaders in terms of what the net gain for the United States is from all of this. We're suffering by virtue of the fact that this $50 billion does not really exist, and it's just going to be printed up. We're suffering from inflation. We're suffering from shortages of critical goods. The economy is in bad shape. I think everyone agrees on that. And also the Europeans are taking a beating in terms of energy itself, and also in terms of a number of products that are vital for their economy. So it's a lose-lose kind of situation for those who are going after Russia. And I think the simple answer is what Lloyd Austin said, this is all about weakening Russia. I'm not sure what that means, but that's what he said, and that must be what they're thinking.
Well, Sean, Europe has been mentioned here. I mean, it seems to me with the U.S. and the U.K. Poised to do everything they can, as Lloyd Austin said, weaken Russia. Does that mean destroying the European economy in the process? Because it certainly looks that way to me. I am absolutely bewildered that European leaders are making the choices that they are. The productivity of Europe is going to be smothered. And then what is the value of the European economy if it isn't allowed to run at full speed, particularly coming out of this pandemic? Go ahead in Paris.
Yes, I completely agree with you, of course. And since I think I'm the only European here, I am wondering what we Europeans are doing in this mess. You see, one way to put it is that there is this moral imperative. We have to defend the poor Ukraine against the bad Russians who have invaded them for no reason whatsoever. Well, first of all, if the sovereignty and the integrity of Ukraine is sacrosanct, why was the sovereignty of Serbia over Kosovo up for grab in 1999? And if Kosovo has the rights of self-determination, or Ukraine has that right, why don't the population in eastern Ukraine have that right? So the moral argument already collapses. The other reason it collapses is that we are taking sanctions against Russia that we never, ever considered taking against the United States for Iraq, and of course, even more for Afghanistan and Libya, where we actually collaborated. And for example, even my country, Belgium, sent troops in those conflicts, not very important one, of course. So the moral argument, I mean, even now we could take sanction against Saudi Arabia because of Yemen, we could take sanction against Israel because of Palestine, et cetera, et cetera. So there is no moral argument whatsoever.
Yeah, but, you could say but Sean, let me stay with you here. You have very valid points, I mean, in all of the conflicts that you've mentioned. But this conflict now that the Europeans have become a co-belligerent in, it is affecting consumers and voters. All those other conflicts that you mentioned, you're absolutely right. There was no moral basis for it. But there's a real practical, pragmatic, physical, financial impact on Europeans. How does that fly in Europe? I mean, it's against their own self-interest. Explain that to us.
Yeah, Peter. I was going to come to that. I say you could say that there's a practical reason to have all these sanctions against Russia because Russia is a threat to us. But that's not true. I mean, the whole trajectory since 1991 of Russia has been trying to be friendly with the West, and in the end, they've been fed up. And now we are going to make them even more alienated by trying to cancel all Russian culture and what other nonsense we are doing now. The Russians are convinced that we want to destroy them, which is not completely true, but I can understand why they believe that. And we are, as you say yourself, we are shooting ourselves in the foot through the economic sanctions. They're not working, they're working against us. So the practical argument collapses also. So they have no argument whatsoever, but how does it work? Suppose I said what I just say now on any, first of all, I wouldn't be invited to start with, on any European channel, there would be a whole hoopla about me being a Putin agent, a Putin lover, a Putin Versteher in German, somebody who understands Putin. I mean, it's just impossible to discuss.
Well, I'm very happy that I still have my program, even though YouTube has removed 17 years of my work, but I'm still going at it here. Stephen, let me go to you. What does Ukraine mean to the average American? Because, you know, I do stay in contact with a small group of people that I went through graduate school with, and they're pretty smart people, and they're academics. They don't know squat about Ukraine. They have no knowledge of the context whatsoever. And I have to admit, they think I'm a bit of a nutcase because I talk about all of these details, like the illegal coup in 2014 and the war on the Donbass for 8 years, the Minsk agreement. They have no idea what I'm talking about. Stephen.
Yeah, so I think, Peter, we're seeing, you know, what we saw in 2014, which when asked, you know, where's the Ukraine or the Crimea on a map, nobody could find it. In reality, Americans know nothing. That's a fact for the most part. I would say at least 80%, if not a bit more. The sad thing, as I am, you know, blogging on Facebook, so to speak, is that same percent is buying hook, line, and sinker every single report. And it's a failure of Western media. You may recall at the very beginning of the conflict when the two republics seceded, there were a couple of Western journalists on the other side, a couple, BBC, CNN. And they had some reporting that was not very favorable to the Ukraine. And as I understand it, within a day, all their reporting was, they were videoed. Yep. And that was taken down. And at this point in the West, the only exception to that, Peter, is the right wing and Fox News and Tucker Carlson. But to be very honest, that is not pro-Russian.
No, it's actually pro-American the way I see it. Okay, it's protecting your national interest. Hang on, let me go to Philip here. Philip, the European Union is proposing to pay 9.5 billion euros to pay the Ukraine government's bills, budget, salaries, and all of that. And it's open-ended; they can do whatever they want with it. I mean, those of us that know something about Ukraine, that is it's almost comical. I mean, that money is just going to simply disappear. And so why would Zelensky and his orbit want this conflict ever to end if their bills are going to be paid by the West? Go ahead, Philip.
Well, for one thing, Zelensky can't let this go on forever because he'll run out of soldiers. But the fact is that what you say is absolutely correct. Ukraine is, by general consensus, the most corrupt country in Europe, and also has the worst economy. This is why Senator Rand Paul, has been holding up the money in the U.S. Senate, because he says basically there's no oversight for this. this money is going to disappear down a deep hole, go into a whole bunch of pockets, both in Ukraine and in the United States. And of course, the equivalency will be taking place in Europe. And the benefit that comes out of this is zero. This is the most astonishing thing I think any of us have seen since the enormous propaganda victory and catastrophic foreign policy decision made when we invaded Iraq. This is an incredible event. I think that every morning when I pick up the newspapers as a former intelligence officer, I tend to look for sourcing for these stories. And very often there's no sourcing indicated. And in some cases, the source is the Ukrainian government. which is being advised, of course, by U.S. neocon advisors and military personnel out of uniform. So it's a, you know, this is a disaster. This is a catastrophe in the making.
Well, Philip, if I can stay with you, I mean, when we're looking at this $40 billion, again, if you all add it up, it's like $53 billion with all of the so-called aid. I mean, I suppose there's just going to be brigade after brigade after brigade of Hunter Bidens are going to show up in Ukraine now, okay, because that's it. It's a form of money laundering is what it is, okay? So I'm sure other children of the elites will be signing up for the same kind of gig, because it's very interesting. It seems like replacing of the grift of Afghanistan is now going to Ukraine. Philip, how do you feel about that?
Absolutely. That's absolutely. And you better believe the Hunter Bidens are already there. When we reinstated the embassy a couple weeks ago, they were up the first wave. I mean, they were the Marines landing on the shore. They're ready, and they know how to do this. They've done it before. This is all a con job. The money's going to go to defense contractors in the U.S. It's going to go to politicians, and it's going to be stolen by the Ukrainians.
Well, that's a prognosis I have, and any of us that know Ukraine, and I've been there over a dozen times, that's exactly how it works, okay? Unfortunately, members of Congress don't have any idea about that. Or maybe they do. Maybe that's the joke on us. All right, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on economic blowback. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing economic blowback. Okay, let's go back to Jean in Paris. Jean, I mean, you in your first answer, you talked about the moral imperative of Western elites to do something, let's say Iraq, Afghanistan, all that. And we were fed all the propaganda here. But isn't there a moral imperative for the European leadership to its own people? I mean, I look at just going on through every single country, inflation. Then you have some countries that have this huge immigration of Ukrainians, which it's not going to. It's all rosy for the beginning, but after a while, it ends up being very, very expensive. A disruption of society. In the UK, they have food banks that are being pressured here. I mean, where's the moral imperative to take care of your own people? Because I for the life of me, I cannot understand the strategic, economic, political value of Ukraine to the European Union. Go ahead.
Neither do I. That's what I say. There is no practical reason either. But the moral imperative, it's completely one-sided and, whatever you want. But there is this pressure from the media. You see, you speak of the fourth power, but the fourth power is not democratic at all. It escapes all democratic control. And I think politicians, even if they think otherwise, it's very hard for them to oppose. But I wanted to make a comment about this money laundering scheme that Ukraine has become. There's one person in Congress who said that, is Marjorie Taylor Greene, okay? And I don't know her very well, but I know that the liberal intelligentsia consider her as a nutcase, etc. But nevertheless, she said that exactly that against this $40 billion, and she was right. And what did the squad, the left of the Democratic Party, vote for? They voted for the $40 billion. So we have an inversion of values, at least from my point of view, and from people like my age who remember the Vietnam War, that the so-called left has become more warlike, war hawk, than some of the right, not the whole right, of course, but some of the right. And in Europe, for example, in Germany in particular, who are the more war hawks of all? The Greens.
The Greens.
Who are founding the pacifist movement. The Greens Amazing. Are the most enthusiastic for sanctions that will destroy the German economy. They don't care less about the German economy. I mean, that's unbelievable, but that's the way we are. You see, I have only one thought, is that this is Untergang des Abendlandes, decline of the West. I mean, there is no, I mean, this is a book which are from Spengler, which are not supposed to quote, but and I don't particularly like. But you see, this is a situation in which there is no reflection. There is no way to criticize. There is no way to discuss. Let me finish with one remark. You know, everybody has been making fun of the slip of the tongue of George W. Bush when he said that, you know, there's this one man, Putin, who decides unilaterally the invasion of Iraq, Ukraine, okay? But what did he say before that? He said, in Russia, there are no checks and balance. In the US and in Europe, there are supposedly check and balance. What's the efficiency of the checks and balance? What's the efficiency of our free press? Nothing. Nothing.
It's such a good point, because they say they're doing it all in the name of democracy as they erode democracy in their own countries. You're absolutely right on that. Stephen, as I said in my introduction, the Russian economy has recovered. I watched the roller coaster ride of the ruble. It's stable. It's actually more valuable now than it was before the start of the conflict. Obviously, and apparently, they were prepared for all of these sanctions here. So when you have the, you know, Lindsey Grahams of the world, you know, that they, you know, Putin must be taken out and all of this other rhetoric here, it's not working. So if it's not working, are they going to up the ante? I mean, they're looking very, very foolish. I mean, let's go to Stephen in Minneapolis on that. Go ahead, Stephen.
Yeah, I think certainly to me, this is more about history than Hunter Biden. And I read a lot of history, and this is just classic for centuries, West against Russia. And if we throw in there Bismarck, Russia without the Ukraine, that kind of says a lot. At this point, at least economically, the U.S. and the rest of the EU, in any event, seem to be going, as a Russian would say, va-bank. They're going all in, doubling down. I'm not quite so sure, you know, the state of the Russian economy. I certainly the ruble's doing well.
Well, I mean, J.P. Morgan came out with a desk note at the beginning of this week here, and I used the word resilient because they used the word resilient. So I'm not an economist. I refer to people who are, okay? Obviously, there are dislocations here. I'm not painting a rosy picture. Keep going.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, and I'm not arguing it's good shape. I think there's been a tragic miscalculation, right? When we remember Obama saying we've ripped the Russian economy to shreds, and you know, I am over quite frequently. I'm shut down lately, but it's funny because I get a snapshot a couple times a year way back then, and the stores, you know, the shelves in the stores were fine, restaurants, everything absolutely fine. So from that perspective, I think they underestimated the whole movement in Russia to insulate itself. You know, shutting down SWIFT, it's a big deal.
It's a big deal.
But they've been expecting that for years now. So
Stephen, I'll have to tell you that, I mean, inflation is an issue that a lot of Russians are having have to deal with, as well as everyone else in the world here. Let me go to Philip right now. Philip, you're an old hand. Remember during the Cold War, keep the Germans down, the Russians out, and the Americans in. I guess it had nothing to do with fighting communism, because that's exactly what these neocons, the Uniparty, is doing in Washington. The thing is, the caveat is, that was supposed to be good for Europe. It's not good for Europe, and it's actually bad for the West in general. Go ahead, Philip.
Yeah, this is one of the great mysteries. You know, this is, as I said before, I mean, the most incredible con job, because this whole thing is being sold on the basis of the two crunch words, you know, freedom and democracy. Once you get below that level, you see that there is absolutely no reason for any of this having taken place at all, that this was a negotiable issue over a number of years,
yes,
that the West and the United, pushed by the United States, was not interested in negotiating. And so we have this situation where it will be the American people, the Europeans, who will suffer more than the Russians. And Russia will not go through regime change. So it's going to be an endless conflict, as I said in the beginning, to weaken Russia, whatever that is supposed to mean, as a competitor, as a force for a non-American perspective of what the world is and should be. I don't really know. I talk to a lot of people. The leftists are worse on this issue than are the conservatives. They have the people who are supposed to believe in all these abstractions are actually the ones who are pushing for stronger measures. I suppose they think that if there's a war, they or their children or grandchildren won't have to fight it or get nuked during it. But, you know, that's a false perception. A couple of wrong steps, and all of this could go beyond the economy and into something that's much more horrific.
Well, because Philip, because Ukraine is important to Russia, but Ukraine has no meaningful value to Europe or the United States. This is what is mystifying by all this. And you're absolutely right. It could have easily been very easily avoided after the December 17th, when the two ultimatums were sent out. That's all I talked about for 3 months. And I kept saying, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. We have to avoid this. And, you know, I was unfortunately right. John, let me go to you in Paris. I mean, future historians are going to wonder why the Europeans sold themselves out to the Americans. Because, sure, I mean, the energy issues are global, hurts the United States, but it damages Europe beyond repair in many ways. I mean, how do you explain this tutelage that the Europe is playing along with? It's mystifying to me. Go ahead, in Paris.
Yeah, that's true. But you see, coming back to the U.S. and Canada, there's an intense irrational element, which I attribute partly to descendants of emigres from the Russian Empire.
It's true.
And who sent, you know, the oppression of their grandfather, great-grandfather, whatever, or great-grandparents. I mean, they can be people from the Baltic countries, from Poland, from Ukraine, and Jews. Let's not avoid saying that, to be honest. In Ukraine, in Canada, for example, the Ukrainians are very important. And there's a Ukrainian lobby pushing Canada.
Christina New, their deputy prime minister, yes.
And of course, in the U.S., I don't need to explain. I think Philip knows that better than I do. And in Europe, we have the same situation. And then because of the moral intimidation that these people exert by saying, oh, you're Putin verstehen. I mean, it's impossible to react, and it's suicidal. I think the capitalists, actually, contrary to what the left said, the capitalists have no interest in these things except some oil companies. And in fact, they are, losing. I mean, Renault, for example, has lost a lot of money. Their French banks have lost some money, and they can't do anything because the media are all gung-ho, against the Russians. But you see, I think also one should say that ever since 2014, it has been completely obvious that the only way to solve this problem in Ukraine would be through negotiation. The east of Ukraine demanded autonomy, and they were right, and they should have gotten it. They didn't get it. Now they just don't want to hear about Ukraine at all. Now Ukraine has lost the east, they have lost Crimea, they have lost Kherson, etc., and maybe they will lose more. The position of the Ukrainian government is still that they want to get back everything, including Crimea. But to get back that...
Yeah, but John, it seems to me that you're right, but where does that come from? Because a month ago in Istanbul, it looked like there was some kind of movement here, and then it was Boris Johnson, the American administration, said, no, you do not negotiate. And that is the problem here, because, I'll say with John here, the problem is that the West doesn't want a negotiated end here, and that is what's really troubling, because the only alternative is more conflict. Last 30 seconds, go to you, Sean. Go ahead in Paris.
Fresh from their defeat in Afghanistan, the U.S. thinks they're going to win against Russia through the Ukrainians. Good luck.
Okay. All right. Stephen, I'll give you the last 20 seconds here. Are the American people prepared for war with Russia?
I don't believe they're prepared for war, but... I do believe that, you know, yes, we have inflation, we have some shortages and that kind of stuff, but this financial stuff, they're down for it, unfortunately. And it's going to keep going. And at this point, we're not talking 40 billion. We're talking, Peter, well over a trillion over the last 6-8 years.
Well, right? I'll end on this. The word on Capitol Hill is the $3 trillion. And that's really amazing because that's just replacing the Afghan grip. It's no coincidence in my mind. Gentlemen, that's all the time we have. Many thanks to my guests in Percival, Minneapolis, and in Paris. And thanks to our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, crosstalk rules.